Jema. So we have two options about questions. One is afternoon sessions could be questions. But I'm not sure how many will come or not come. But that would now... Other option is, I don't mind, we can take a little shorter session now and we can have questions for those who are here. So either way is fine. Afternoon sessions, questions are a little better because people are a bit sleepy and so they have options. So, but it's entirely up to each one. I'll try to make it little shorter, maybe by 12:10 we can close this session and we have about 20-30 minutes for questions. Another thing is, why the afternoon session? Because many of the questions will automatically get cleared as we go through the Sri Aurobindo's life journey. It's just that Sri Aurobindo's life and the mother, of course, and the yoga, they are intertwined, and that's how the inspiration is coming. They are woven together, and with their life is woven our own life and yoga. Because at the end of the day, where we can reach and what is our destiny as an individual, as a nation, and as the earth is basically what Sri Aurobindo as the incarnate divine has opened. So that's why they are all intertwined. Our own destiny is connected with Sri Aurobindo's yoga. Whether we do it or not, that's our destiny of the earth is connected. So we continue. We have just touched the little strings of Sri Aurobindo's life here and there. Of course, his life is too vast, too deep for anyone to write about it or speak about it. But few things we can see by this time, say in the early part of the previous century, 1902, 1903, 1904, 1905, that there are certain aspects which have already begun to come up. One that we see is Sri Aurobindo the poet, as we have seen from 10 years of age. And we have about 300 poems which are high class poetry. Sri Aurobindo himself wanted, if somebody would ask that, who are you? He would rather prefer that there is a poet in me rather than a philosopher. He never, we have turned him into a philosopher. That's a different thing. But poetry came very natural to him. It comes naturally to mystics, incidentally. And there is no wonder that the highest truths that he realized, revealed, his own life, all that is in a poetic form in Savitri. But we'll come to that little later. But about 300 poems, some of which are long poems in very difficult meters. Quantitative hexameter is regarded as one of the most difficult forms of poetry in English poets. Among the English poets, very few have spoken about it. You see, as Sri Krishna says, I am a vibhuti as well as an avatar. So there is this aspect of Sri Aurobindo as the vibhuti and the avatar. And the vibhuti aspect is no less fascinating. For example, he laid down the foundations of a new poetry. It's now the poets of the dawn, the future poetry, the mantra, poetry as mantra. All this is there in his writings. Of course, that requires a whole, maybe a week-long study. Some of his long poems... Ilion, Ahana, and then some of the poems where he, Vikram Urvashi, based on certain stories that we are aware of, they are amazing. Ilion especially is a hexameter, and I have read Homer's Iliad and Odyssey both, not in their poetic form, so I can't comment about the poetry part, but I have read the read it in English form, and I can tell you that I used to personally feel that there is this missing element until I read Ilion, because I read the Iliad and Odyssey before I had turned towards Sri Aurobindo and the mother, and when I read the Ilion, I said, this is what I felt is missing. It takes up that period between you know, when the war has to start, and then little bit he dips into the war, and all the negotiations that go from behind, all that is not there in Iliad. And it's amazing, sheerly as a poetic wonder, as a story, it's very rich. And other than Savitri, if there was one poem that Sri Aurobindo himself wanted to complete, it was Ilion. He didn't get the time to complete it. It's incomplete. It's about 100 pages, but amazing. I mean, I personally feel it's worth reading, if one is, of course, has the poetic bent. But this poet continued with Sri Aurobindo all through. Then other than the poet, we already see that he had not so much the revolutionary, because I don't like to call Sri Aurobindo a revolutionary. Sri Aurobindo is revolution. So revolutionary is still something which is outside an act one is doing. Sri Aurobindo is revolution in whatever field he touched. We just gave the example of poetry, in philosophy, everywhere we see Sri Aurobindo brings in this completely new dimension. So, and a new dimension which changes our understanding. So we have the other aspect of Sri Aurobindo as an author. So there again, one of his first writings, which is a kind of play, The Harmony of Virtues, written at the age of 18. And again, their friends are discussing about the basis of goodness. So they talk about morality, they talk about ethics and everything, and at the end, you know, one of the main protagonists says, but there is nothing else but love, something like that. And it's so amazing, that whole play, The Harmony of Virtues. It runs into some 60 pages. There are other writings also. He has written stories, he has written plays which are so hilarious, some of them, which can literally, they split bare human personality. You almost feel looking at behind the hypocritical mask of humanity, what lies behind. And one, I personally felt, and some of the people with whom I used to read, we used to go into splitting roars of laughter. Can we imagine Sri Aurobindo writing that? And many things, romance, when he writes about romance, it's amazing that how he knew about human nature in all its details. No wonder when he described the new being, he says, prophet and lover, prophet and communicant, and lover and king. So all aspects, the integrality of human nature, we find, but lifted to what height. So this is the other aspect of Sri Aurobindo as an author. And then we see the third aspect of Sri Aurobindo, which is running alongside, and that is of a yogi. At the age of 18, he is reading a very crude translation of Isha Upanishad, and he has a mental realization of the self. But that is Sri Aurobindo saying mental realization. Somebody else would say, I realize the self. That later on he would say, the self reflected in the mind, all that is unique to Sri Aurobindo. People can think that they have experienced the self, but it's only a reflection they have had, not the true experience. So all that comes in Sri Aurobindo's writings, we see. And then the fourth element we see is of the revolutionary, or the lover of humanity and the lover of India, both. Again, they are interconnected, because he saw in India as the crucible of the new world. It's where the new creation is being prepared. And then this new creation has to spread, go all over the world, far and wide, and seed it with these seeds of light. So India, in Sri Aurobindo's light, is a Yajnavedi. In a certain sense, all earth has to become a Yajnavedi. But India is a Yajnavedi where experiment on human evolution is being conducted, and all the Jatiltam problems, the most difficult, complex problems of mankind, have been brought to India, because India has to decided to do PhD on Divino Humanity. There is no such word in dictionary. That's just an invention right now. So, but actually, we often don't understand the paradox of India. But Sri Aurobindo says that in India, a national yoga is going on. He writes about it long back. So, the ancient Indian society was a sattvic society. Then we read white fell through the rajo tamo guna. And that we know. We need not go into it. Now, India starts again. So it has to engage in an yoga. So there are three stages of the yoga. First is when it is initiated into yoga. So the initiating mantra that Sri Aurobindo gave to Mother India, to the sleeping deity called India, is Bande Mataram. Wake up, O Mother. I bow down to thee, O Mother. And his poem in Sanskrit, he wrote in Sanskrit also one poem, which is Bhavani Bharati. Also Tantra Siddhi Prakaranam, but that's a short piece. He also wrote in Latin and Greek and French, but they are one pieces. But Bhavani Bharati, where he literally expresses that, what shall I be the subject of my poetry when I see a demon sitting on the chest of my mother and sucking her blood? Should I write about romance? Should I write about other things? And if one reads one of his poems called Envoy, when he is coming from England, he says that, not for me the Sicilian grooves through which angels roam. People go to England, people go to US, nice, everything is so good. He says, this is not for me. He could have stayed on. Some of the famous names had developed a liking for him. But he fails in the writing test of the ICS. He wants to come back and comes to Baroda, because the Maharaja had come, princely state. And he's enrolled in what? In land reform. And if we read the writings of Sri Aurobindo on Land Reform Act, on industry in India, there's a very nice little anecdote about it, that he would write the speeches for the Maharaja. Some of them are still available. So the Maharaja said that, well, you know, the problem is your English is too good. Nobody will believe that I have written it. He says, don't worry, anyway, nobody will believe that the Maharaja has written it, because the speeches of Maharaja are always written, so you don't worry, let me write, you speak. Even Sri Aurobindo's whole, during that part in Baroda, many people have not noticed it, he writes about medical departments, their functioning, in case of flood, in case of epidemic, how things should, what should be the chain, how things should be done. I mean, it's something, a lesson for modern mind. I mean, Mahasaraswati's perfection we can see there. So he was first as in the land collection department, and there are very interesting stories about it, how he wouldn't bother about who is getting promotion and what. He would be busy with his books, with his own yoga. He didn't use the word yoga. And he would not attend to any of the parties. So initially that was not considered very nice. So Maharaja would expect that he would come, and Sri Aurobindo would not go. He says, but later on he gave up. Sri Aurobindo did not go, because he was just following his Swadharma, that this is not what is meant for me. And so, but he was too precious a jewel for the Maharaja to dispense with. And that tyag and tapasya one can see right during that period. He would sit and read books for long, till 12, 1, 2. He would carry trunk load of books to his home. People carry gifts and other things, dresses. And Sri Aurobindo, when he would take leave and go back home, he would carry trunk loads of books. This is how he lived his life. And till 2 o'clock at night, he would be sitting, reading, maybe later. And so there was a Maratha cook, and he would cook for him, and Sri Aurobindo would just say, "Rakh do," and then rakh diya. Then it's growing cold, he would come and again remind Sri Aurobindo, he would just give a smile. And they describe, those who saw him, that mosquitoes around with that little light, and Sri Aurobindo is oblivious of everything else. How yoga is done? You just read Sri Aurobindo's life. There is a small book, Sri Aurobindo in Baroda, by his Bengali teacher, Dinendra Kumar Roy. And one gets so much insight into how yoga is done. He is lying on a mat on the floor. He expected a foreign returned person, so erudite, he would be very fussy, wearing a suit. Sri Aurobindo wears a dhoti and lies on a mat on the floor. And when he says, "What is it? You are lying on the mat." He says, "But that is how brahmacharis in India are meant to live." He was already following that ashram without making a fuss about it. Even the Britishers, when they came to arrest him and saw him in this way, He said, what? We believe you are England educated and you live in such a simple and ordinary way? And Sri Aurobindo reminded him that, you know, how is one's dress got to do with one's inner attainments? This is Sri Aurobindo in Baroda, the kind of life he's leading. And when he'll get money, he would put it in a bowl. And the servants could pick up whatever they wanted. And they would use it. So somebody asked him, you are keeping in the bowl. Don't you think they will steal or whatever? Sri Aurobindo laughs and says, I get what I need. And the fact that at the end of the month, some money is still remaining in the bowl is a sign that they are honest people. How much was the amount of money anyone can imagine? This is early 1900. Some 700 rupees or 750 rupees. It's not some ordinary amount. And he's just keeping it like that. This is how he dealt with the subordinates, with people living around him. And this continued. Even in Pondicherry, there's a very touching story that they would discover this Amrita, Suresh Moni, and I think Bijoy Nag, one of them. And they saw that money is getting disappeared. The money was always in short supply there. So money is disappearing and they wondered how is it going. So one day they waited. Chori kaun kar raha hai? And they saw that this milk boy comes, keeps the milk, and he was supposed to pick up the money or get the money later. He opens the drawer and takes out 5 rupees, shuts it, sees here and there, nobody is looking at him, puts it in his cap and wears, adjusts the cap, and he's about to go. Now these people were waiting. They pounce upon him. Pakad liya! Something they shouted. Suddenly they see Sri Aurobindo coming on the threshold. Sri Aurobindo looks at them. And Amrita writes, when he looked at us, we felt guilty. We are doing something wrong. We are doing something wrong. Sri Aurobindo looks at them and all that he says is, let the boy go, and goes back. It says, we realize that, you know, he had such a heart of compassion which we cannot understand or imagine. He didn't make ostentatious things like, you know, giving money and writing his name on the board, nothing. There is the story of the Sri Aurobindo going with the Maharaja of Baroda on the pavement, and suddenly a woman, her lakdi ka gatri, you know, stack of woods, it falls and she is trying to pick it up, and the Maharaja takes a big strides and goes there and stacks it around and puts it on her head and then looks back at Sri Aurobindo, comes back and feels ki kya sardar sabashi dega. That see, he will say, what a lovely thing, Maharaja. Being a Maharaja, you could do this. Amazing. Sri Aurobindo smiles and says, yes, yes, this is what we have been doing. Always picking up the burden and putting it back on man's head. He says, as a Maharaja, the sign of a Maharaja would be that an old lady doesn't have to do this. This is Ram Raj. He already has conceived all this in him. When he goes to Alipur jail, someone, Rilanli Devi, his wife, they got married in 1900. And he hardly had a married life. Even as a married, he remained a brahmachari. There is a whole conversation about Sri Aurobindo when someone asked him that, is it possible to practice brahmacharya in married life? He said, yes. He was asked, do you know of anyone who has done it? So very passingly, but that's when friendly conversation is taking place. Yes, he says, I have lived like a brahmachari. Just imagine. And he never makes any bones about it. That's the beauty. That he has lived like a tapaswin all his life. So when his wife Mrilani Devi is with his sister Sarojini and they are sitting on Shillong where his wife's house was, beautiful place, she came from Shillong, she was very beautiful by the way, and she was called as The Shobindo's own mother was called as Rose of Rangapur. And Nalini Devi, you see the picture is there. You will see that she is very beautiful. And they are sitting, but she had to go through that. People may use the word suffering, but often they say, oh, she never had a happy married life. If my take on this is very simple, I would die 100 times to be Shobindo's wife. What a privilege, what a privilege. I mean, who would think of anything else? Just to be his wife, what does it mean? I would change my gender to be Shobindo's wife. What a privilege, just to be in, breathe that atmosphere. Just to give one or two instances, since we are talking about what kind of a life he would have led. So, Sarojini looks at Mrilani Devi and says, Bodhi, don't you see this city is so beautiful down below? Because you can see those lights in, you know, when you are sitting in Shillong, upper Shillong, then you can see those lights below like a three tire. So, she says, you know what, Saro? There is a much more beautiful city in the heart of your brother. See, that city is Ashram and Auroville much later. She knew what is there he is carrying in his heart. Love for mankind, the master of man. He would describe Krishna as the master of man and his infinite lover. He is close to our hearts, had we vision to see. We are lost in the pride and the pomp of our passions. We are bound by our thoughts where we hold ourselves free. We have seen him amuse on the top of the mountains. We have seen him at work in the heart of the spheres. He slays without stint and is full of compassion. He wars for the world and its ultimate years. It is he in the sun who is ageless and deathless. And into the midnight his shadow is thrown. When darkness was covered and dense, when darkness was dense and covered with darkness, he was seated within it, immense and alone. So this is Shobindo. Several places we see a life of total tyag and tapasya. But for what? Not for his moksha. So this yogi who is running without being called a yogi, he does not, you know, that term. Later mother would also say, there are people who are engaged in yoga, but they don't know or they don't call themselves yogi, which is so much better. Because, you know, the moment you say yogi, I don't know, I saw this, used to watch this little serial along with my son. Its title was Yogi Bear. So that is stuck into my mind. So yogi reminds me always of something. You see, you don't have to call yogi and 108 times yogi. Does it depend on what you call yourself? So Shobindo, you will see everywhere Shobindo. And someone asked him that, sir, they wanted to write this or that. He says, why not Shobindo itself? Simple Shobindo. Nothing else is required. You are what you are. And same thing we see with mother's life. That, you know, she has made paintings which are displayed in Lube, and many of these things got lost. And the disciple says, we want to bring your things from Lube and keep them here. Mother says, my child, we live in eternity. The sun does not have to announce its coming. When it comes, people wake up. Man may remain asleep because man has a habit of sleeping when light is there. But nature understands, the birds understand, and that's what the mother would later say when the supramental has come. She says, it will be nature first and the simple creatures who will first receive it. And she says, the most difficult and the last ones to receive will be with people with the mind. Very complicated minds. They have said that very clearly. So we see simultaneously a yogi and experiences going through the revolutionary, the poet and the yogi and one of the finest human beings, they are all getting fused into one. Running as it were, parallel with each other, not parallel but intertwined. He has experiences like when he goes to Takht-e-Suleiman on Shankaracharya Hill. he suddenly has the experience of the vacant infinite. Ekamev Dityam, if you want to put it, that there is the one infinite consciousness. Then suddenly while in the carriage, he has the experience of the Godhead emerging from his own being and pausing the whole carriage from disaster. He goes to Narmada, sees a small image of Kali. It's not, you know, when we go there, then we realize, oh, it's not something very big like Kali, but small image of Kali. And suddenly he discovers the world mother. He goes to Saras Bagh in Pune. These are different places he visited to give talks, etc. This is before Pondicherry we are talking about. I'm not giving years because this is not a academic or a scholarly thing, but before Pondicherry, his experiences. So there again he speaks of the world mother who has been seated there and all the gods are around and seated below, and he used to see these things. As a result of pranayam, he develops the ability, lines after lines, ability of subtle vision, and lines after lines of poetry, up to 200, 300 lines would flow through his pen. So many experiences he was having simultaneously, but his focus was that India must be free. That kind of one-pointed focus. And in that context, we see Sri Aurobindo's first major experience. When he's looking for it, he knows that yoga gives power. So he wants power to help in India's freedom. Of course, later on, Mother and Sri Aurobindo have cleared very clearly that don't seek power. There is a whole conversation where she speaks about yoga and she says, what do you want the yoga for? So different people say different things. Then she says, I'm happy none of you said that you want yoga for power. Power comes, but it's dangerous because, you know, you will collapse. So all this is going on, and then he wants power, and Barinda, through somebody, came to know about Yogi Bhaskar Lele, who is a Vaishnava yogi. And he came to initiate him, and all that he told him, that sit, look at your thoughts and throw them away. And Sri Aurobindo does it, and his mind is completely free of all thoughts. And he can't imagine that he could achieve all this in such a short time. And then all that he had to tell him was that, are you ready to surrender to the divine within your heart? He says, yes. He said, follow his guidance. That was the end of the story. Sri Aurobindo's surrender to the divine in the heart, then he would follow his guidance. When he would speak to the Narayana in the audience. And everything was based on that. So slowly the yogi and the revolutionary are fusing into each other. And that is the time, as I said, that there was a yogi already running. Sri Aurobindo gave the mantra of initiation to India, Bande Mataram. Of course, Bande Mataram, we all know, has been written by Bankim Chandra Chattopadhyay in his famous novel Anand Math, portion of which Sri Aurobindo is translated. But that two words became the note of awakening for the Indian nation. So he says that was the initiation into yoga for India. And he says very cryptically, when India is ready, when she becomes free, then the mantra, the full mantra will be given to India for the fulfillment. So people often ask that what is that mantra, because Sri Aurobindo never wrote that mantra. So that mantra, interestingly, the mother gives. This is my way. Mother didn't say, oh, you know. The Leela is not like that. Oh, Sri Aurobindo has said, now I am giving the mantra. That's a very mentalized way of doing it. In 71, when India was going through a difficult war, then mother was asked, tell us something which we can do to help India. So she says, here is something which you should recite like a mantra, prayer like a mantra. And that she gave us, Supreme Lord, Eternal Truth, let us obey Thee alone and live according to truth. So often people ask, then where is the mantra in Sanskrit? People have translated this into Sanskrit. But isn't this Satyameva Jayate Nanritam? That is the mantra, interestingly, enshrined in the constitution, in the parliament, you will find. Satyameva Jayate. And this is the path India has to follow. Sanatana Dharma is based on truth. truth and courage with love as its core. This is Sanatana Dharma's core. For us, truth is sacred, not belief and non-beliefs and sects and cults. We want the truth and the complete truth, not half truth. Samagram Maam. We want the divine, but not disembodied divine, not disconnected from the world. We want the divine truth in everything. And this is where we see the supramental manifestation, the age of truth. Truth in speech, truth in feelings, truth in actions, truth in will. So this is, and what truth? Not just our mental truth. We say, I am straightforward. When they have to abuse somebody, I am straightforward. It's not that truth they are speaking about. That truth which can set the spirit free. Truth that is delight. That's how Mother says. Truth is supreme harmony and delight. Raso vaisaha. And then he says that as India, like in any yoga, once truth begins to work, it brings out many tendencies. So we see that the second stage of Indian nation, when for a long period there is a catharsis, there are sattvic elements which come out intensely, rajas, ambitions and whatnot. They are part of the process of yoga. Things which were buried, things which were hidden, they suddenly come out. Everybody was not fighting freedom movement just because they really love the motherland. We all know now. People were doing all kinds of things for all kinds of reasons. Some to sit on the throne when India is free, which unfortunately eventually led to the partition. Yes, everybody was united in overthrowing the British, but not for the same reason. And Shubhendu saw through all this. He saw that we are not ready for what he wanted to give for India. Because already by then, after the Nirvana experience, absolutely with clarity that India is not ready to receive what he is going to give. Mother, in one of her writings, says that Shurabindo deeply loved his motherland. But he knew that politics is a thing which is very dark and full of falsehood. That's why they did not want the children to go into politics actively, because then it drags you down into the mud and mire. And few are there who can be strong and ready. They are chosen instrument, they are fine. They can, to each his own place. But in general, because it's something very dark and full of falsehood. So first is, he saw that India is not ready for what he wants to give. Even for armed revolt, India was not ready. Because there were too much still of the, white Babu, Sahib. So it was there. So he saw that he is looking 100 years into the future. Read Bande Mataram and we'll see Karma Yogin. What is he asking of Indians? To be yogins. Where are people ready for yoga? Karma Yogin. He gives the name, and we will see in Karma Yogin, every issue used to have, there were journals. You have Shri Krishna, the charioteer, and Arjun. He wants Indians to become yogins. And during the freedom struggle, some of the people were kind of yogins. He describes that some of them, they were reading the Gita, they went through these hardships. So this was an intense period of initiation, awakening. And then the Rajasic period. And then he says will come the period of India's golden glory, which I do believe somewhere it has probably begun in some way or the other. But still there is a lot more purification required, because in yoga purification is so important. So we see Sri Aurobindo doing all that. So one reason was that world was not ready, but India had been initiated. The mantra of initiation was given. India's soul had been awakened in Durga Stroth, his last writing in Karma Yogin. So he has awakened the soul of India. And third, he had laid down all the lines along which India will get freedom. Later on we hear these words. He writes, Swadeshi is not enough, we need Swaraj. Of course, Sri Aurobindo is not the first person to use the word Swaraj. There was some Marathi, not Tilak also, there was another gentleman who has used the word. But Sri Aurobindo is the one who gave life, breath to it, Swaraj. So there are writings on Swaraj and so many writings where he speaks about what Swaraj is. And without self-mastery, Swaraj is meaningless. Political freedom is important, but if we remain slaves to our own inadequacies and deficiencies, then we'll just bungle up. So in 1932, when he was asked by Nirodha, are you doing something about India's freedom? He says, all that is already decided. Third reason why he was with you, because he saw that India is now, freedom is assured. In 1909, when a reporter asked him, a Tamil reporter, that what do you foresee of the future? By then his yogic credentials were established. We'll come to that in a moment. So then Sri Aurobindo says that what is he foreseeing? He says, I see revolutions, and at the end of it, amidst those revolutions, India will be free. And then he predicts in another writing casually, the sun of India's destiny will rise and overflow India and overflow Asia and overflow the world. All this is before 1930s. Not now. Now you may say, looks like possible. He had foreseen all this. So the third reason why he withdrew, second was that people were not ready for the kind of politics he had brought to the world. Second, that he had laid down the lines. Swadeshi, Swaraj, passive boycott and national education. These were the four things on which Sri Aurobindo emphasizes. Swadeshi was important. Now we are talking about it. Swaraj, of course, is important. But we have gained Swaraj independence, but not yet Swaraj in the sense that Sri Aurobindo wanted it. So Swaraj. Then passive boycott, that time it was so important. Later on, Gandhiji took up, the Congress took up that. And national education, which now we are talking about. All this, very beautifully, in detail, about the relative autonomy, the village autonomy, the panchayati raj, which later on was taken up. What are its merits? How Sri Aurobindo supported it? That there should be a great degree of autonomy to the local centers. Too much centralization is not good. I mean, one could go on and on. It's worth being implemented and read at least by all the politicians. So all this with logic, he has explained what India should be and could be. And when he had done all that was necessary, then he enters into another kind of work. Now the yogi is ready for the full blooming. But he was attached not to his wife, not to others, but to India. So he writes in his letter to Mrilalini Devi. He says, all of them are knocking at my doors, and I know I have the power to raise India out of its state. I know I have the power to raise the country. That is the kind of state he is living in. And that time, his wife, of course, as I said, went through that very challenging times. But she understood perfectly. I mean, anyway, Sri Aurobindo, being Sri Aurobindo, nobody else could have stopped him. Sister Nivedita goes and tells him once that the British government is after you. Why don't you go away, escape? And he says, you know very well that when once one has given oneself, surrendered to the Divine Mother, he has to obey her, not any mental logic. So he waits for the guidance. So this is Sri Aurobindo, and no wonder somewhere the British felt the heat of his writings because it was awakening people, and they put him in the prison in a case of sedition. They have tried sedition case 3 times, so first time it failed, and second time they put him in the prison, just as an under trial prisoner. So he has to go into that higher field via the prison. And he says his experiences are documented. One is in Tales of Prison Life, and later on in his one and only public speech about his own experiences. Public speeches are there after that. But he describes about his own experiences in the jail and how Vasudev comes to him, and beautifully he says, what did Sri Krishna tell him? Vasudev, He says, the bonds that you did not have the power to break, I broke for you. So what were the bonds? Attachment to India and her freedom. And he won't let that go. And he brings him to the prison, and very beautifully captured in one of his aphorisms, that I went to a holy place and I got bored. And God took me to a prison and made it a trysting ground for his meeting. So that's where we see the great transition where Sri Aurobindo fully. So, and these two steps, Nirvana and the Vasudevam Sarvamiti, are important, because later on several places he will emphasize something which we have still not are clear. But when we read Sri Aurobindo, it becomes so clear that there is the Shar Purusha in this creation, mutable, and there is the Akshara Brahma, which is beyond all this transient, mutable world as the stable basis. All this, we see all the lectures talking about it. But it's only the Gita which speaks about the third Purusha, Uttam Purusha, Purushottama. The divine is a being. He is not just an impersonal Brahman or simply a personal God. He is a being, Sachidanand. And that Sri Aurobindo discovers everywhere in this or that, and several poems indicate that. One of them is One Self, where he says, but Shiva and Krishna are a single God. My rival's downfall is my own disgrace. I look at my enemy and see Krishna's face. So that's a remarkable experience. We'll just read a few lines of from a couple of poems. The cosmic consciousness. So many of them are there. Cosmic spirit. Okay, I'll read this cosmic spirit. The cosmic spirit. There are some of his poems. Cosmic consciousness, cosmic man, cosmic spirit, omnipresence. All of them show the shades of that experience where he is experiencing the one divine everywhere and in everything. The bliss of Brahman, Parabrahman. Sri Aurobindo is not a philosopher. For God's sake, to call him philosopher is to put him many levels down. In a semi-humorous vein, I know of a major general who had retired and who had come to Pondicherry. So people didn't understand major general kya hota hai. To unko lagta tha ki major general bolne se inko achha nahi lagega, because general is general, no? Like, to log unko major saab bulate the. And he would share this joke with me. He would say, "Dekho, mujhe yahan major bana diya, kitna demote kar diya." Maine kaha, Pondicherry ki mahima hai. Aapko wo major general ka jo tha tamga, usse nikal rahe hain ye log. Kehte haan, that is true. So when we say Sri Aurobindo is a philosopher, a thinker, actually we are doing a great disservice to him. Sri Aurobindo himself said, and philosophy, there was nothing of the philosopher in me. So why did he write? He says, because in Arya, I was told to write, and I started writing, told by whom? By mother. And then I knew that, well, a yogi can do anything. So I started writing pages after pages of philosophy. But if you ask me, I am more of a poet than a philosopher. So he's not a philosopher with a capital N-O-T. Philosopher belongs to another level. He is a thinker in the mind. And a yogi is a yogi. He ascends beyond the limiting firmaments of the mind and lives in a greater, vaster truth consciousness. That's a yogi. And in India we have forgotten. I can understand that in the West they don't know the difference between a thinker and a yogi, between a philosopher and a spiritual man. But not in India. We always know that yoga means going beyond the mind. And a philosopher is at the level of the mind. He is not thinking out truth. He is realizing truth. He's not asking us to do vichar and vivechana and realize truth. He's asking us to practice yoga and discover truth. He has given a yoga, not a philosophy for mankind. Of course, there is philosophy also for those, as I said, who want to. There are some people who love to, you know, make patterns in the mind. Classroom mein baith ke karte the na wo doodling. Shuru shuru mein bada maja aata hai. ज्यादा करते रहो तो कंफ्यूजिंग हो जाता है, खुद को नहीं पता उंगली कहाँ जा रही है. आई एम श्योर मेनी ऑफ अस वुड हैव डन, आई हैव डन इट. एमबीबीएस में भी किया है डूडलिंग. अब पीछे बैठ के आप बोर हो रहे हो, क्या करोगे? कुछ खेल खेलोगे, कुछ और कुछ किताब पढ़ोगे या डूडलिंग करोगे? तो इसको मैं मेंटल डूडलिंग बोलता हूँ. सुपर माइंड यहाँ है, ओवर माइंड यहाँ है. अच्छा, इल्यूमाइंड माइंड यहाँ है या हायर माइंड यहाँ है? ऐसे ऐसे करके चार्ट बना दिया. कोई सज्जन दिखाने आए कि आपका क्या कहना है. मैंने कहा सुपर माइंड सब जगह है, ओवर माइंड भी सब जगह है, इल्यूमिन माइंड है, ये क्या बात हुई? मैंने कहा हाँ, वो फोर्थ डायमेंशन का ट्रूथ है, आप टू डायमेंशन में ला रहे हैं. सुपर माइंड तो मैटर के अंदर भी है, सुपर माइंड तो हमारे हृदय की गहराई में भी है. दैट्स ए वे ऑफ अंडरस्टैंडिंग. देयर इज अ ट्रूथ इन दैट, बट ए वेरी पार्शियल ट्रूथ, बिकॉज देन वी थिंक ओहो ऐसे ऐसे चढ़ चढ़ के ऐसे वहां पहुंचेंगे, कैसे पहुंचेंगे. सुपर माइंड तो हृदय के अंदर है. इनफैक्ट द गीता डजंट यूज द वर्ड बट से समथिंग वेरी सिमिलर. सिटिंग इन द हार्ट ऑफ ऑल क्रीचर्स, यंत्रारूढ़ माया. अभी हम लोगों ने सुना था ना प्रारंभ में, द डिवाइन वेल्ड बाई हिज योग माया. वट इज सुपर माइंड? अनवेल्ड डिवाइन, फ्री ऑफ ऑल वेल्स, द क्रिएटर इन हिज क्रिएटरिक्स मूड. He is the creator aspect of the divine. Divine has so many aspects. And therefore it can change, because he has the key to the whole creation, the blueprint, the power, the omniscience. The omniscience and omnipotence of God is supermind. And therefore supermind is important. Otherwise Sachidananda realization to kahin se bhi ho sakta hai. Standing on the stair we can jump, everywhere there is Sachidananda. But why supermind? Because it's that creator, but without veils. Normally creator acts through the veils of yog maya, and as we had started, therefore creation becomes distorted through the veils. We don't get the exact order. It's like when divine calls, we don't quite get him, but we say yes sir, yes sir. The fauj mein hamare, sorry to some of our fauji friends are there, but forward post mein gaye ek PMO jisse sab bade pareshan hote the ki ye principal medical officer ye aaye पता नहीं क्या बोलेगा. तो वो जब फोन करता था और कोई लगा देता था कॉल पर, सर हाँ सर, सर नथिंग इज क्लियर सर, सर सर लाइन इज वेरी बैड. सबको पता है, ही ऑल्सो नोस, बिकॉज ही इज गिविंग एन इंस्ट्रक्शन विच यू फील इज सो फुलिश, सो लाइन इज वेरी बैड सर. अब उसके बाद थोड़ी देर बाद वो डिसकनेक्ट होता है. पता नहीं अभी मोबाइल पर करते होंगे कुछ लोग, आई डोंट नो, आई कांट हियर. सो दैट द सिंपलेस्ट वे टू कट ए कॉल शॉर्ट, कनेक्टिविटी प्रॉब्लम. कनेक्टिविटी प्रॉब्लम. अब मोबाइल पर आप कैसे 10 मिनट बात कर सकते हो? मुझे तो 5 मिनट ही अजीब लगता है. और 5 मिनट में तो पहला तो यही होता है कि अच्छा पांडे जी क्या कर रहे हैं, अरे भाई इससे क्या लेना देना, आपको क्या, कहाँ है आजकल, कैसा चल रहा है, बच्चा क्या कर रहा है, मतलब नन ऑफ द थिंग्स विच आई एम इवन अवेयर ऑफ. बच्चा क्या कर रहा है फोन दे देता हूँ, पूछ लीजिए आप. मुझे क्या पूछ रहे हैं. उसके बाद अच्छा एक प्रॉब्लम थी डिस्कस करनी थी. बाय द टाइम 5 मिनट आपके चले गए, प्रेशियस 5 मिनट्स, so what do? Connectivity is poor. I'm just saying that I don't know how people love to chit chat for hours, gossip. I've never understood. There are some people you can pick up anything and you know, like I feel lonely, loneliness and probably vital does that. So, but all this is Sri Aurobindo has, he knows, he is carrying all this within himself. This is the experience, one of the experience, it's more than Vasudevam Sarvamiti, but I'm just saying ki wahan se wo beej nikalta hai, and many experiences he has. People often read the poems called Krishna, but I am deliberately reading this because the experience of the cosmic divine. Vasudevam. Isha Vasyam Idam Sarvam Yat Kincha Jagatyam Jagat. It's the experience of the cosmic divine. The cosmic spirit. I am a single self, all nature fills. Immeasurable, unmoved, the witness sits. He is the silence brooding on her hills, the circling motion of her cosmic mites. Ishavasyam idam sarvam. Now he is describing it in his own andaz. Though later on he would say that the cosmic divine has both these aspects, the passive witness and the dynamic. I have broken the limits of embodied mind and am no more the figure of a soul. The burning galaxies are in me outlined. Vishwarabindu. The burning galaxies are in me outlined. The universe is my stupendous whole. This is Digambar. Not kapde kholke chale jana. I have wrapped the wide world in my wider self. Who is Digambar? Dik. Jisne akash ko od liya. It doesn't matter whether you are wearing a cloth or not wearing a cloth. It's irrelevant after that. I have wrapped the wide world in my wider self, and London and Tokyo and Paris, my spirit seeing are. I am the life of the beast and bird and man. Man's countless misdeeds and few good deeds take place within my single self. I am the bird he feeds and saves, the beast he slays. This is Sri Aurobindo. My life is the life of village and continent. I am earth's agony and her throbs of bliss. I share all creatures, sorrow and content, and feel the passage of every stab and kiss. Impassive, I hear each act. Impassive, I bear each act and thought and mood. Time traverses my hushed beatitudes. Mahakal nahi hai to kya hai? Time traverses my hushed beatitudes. This is just one of them. When I start reading poem, I just feel like more and more of his. Just reading Sri Aurobindo, one discovers a glimpse of who he is. It's a pity all of us have misrepresented him as a philosopher. Very difficult. Sri Aurobindo utne difficult nahi hai. Jitne unke presenters unko difficult bana dete hain. Sri Aurobindo super mind. Ab wo aadmi ka mind hi ghum jata hai. Oh, exam language jiska koi disconnect hota hai. What is he saying? So simple, so direct. He is not imagining, conjuring, thinking, guessing. Only we don't have this experience, so I understand we don't understand it. But at least we should know what is that experience of Sri Aurobindo in which he is woken up, he is living. Then what was his state when he was in the freedom movement? He's not just a freedom worker. He's not just one of the many revolutionaries. He writes in his poem, I face earth's happenings with an equal soul. In all are heard thy steps. Tread destiny's pathways in my front. Life's whole tremendous theorem is thou complete. That's divine work. Jivan Mukta. Only to bring God's forces to waiting nature, I live. That's how he describes. That was his inner life. And one of the classic examples is when we see Surat Congress, 1907. And I often tell people, if you want to see a picture of Sri Aurobindo, what it is to be a sthit pragya, a person in nirvana, and how one works in the world. Because this is a question which Arjun asks. Sri Aurobindo has written a whole essays on the Gita, on Nirvana and works in the world. Just see him. He is sitting there like Bhole Baba. That is the time when people have recorded in the... there must be somewhere. Yeah, there must be somewhere in this wonderful exhibition, I must say. Now, there he is sitting in the midst of... Not this one. There is the one where all... quite likely behind me. Yeah, probably behind me. Where all these different people and Tilak is standing and saying something. And there was a rakhas going on. And Sri Aurobindo is sitting there like calm. And later on he says, nobody knew it is... I had given the order to split the Congress. If I may add, jisko Bhagwan ne tod diya, wo to tootte hi jayega. I am the one who gave the order to split the Congress. Silently he told. And then there was all this going on and people abuses and all. He is sitting quietly and calmly. Because he had seen this policy of... And if we read through all the answers of a modern time, he has written about Swaraj and the Muslims. And he says they don't accept. But yet, how we have to meet them? He says, Hindu Rashtra of the type which Shivaji anticipated, now it's not possible in the new conditions. He says that. He says, what we can have is a nation where everybody obviously has his place, but under the larger arch of the broader Hinduism, that's possible. And then he glazed down all the details. Actually, there is nothing he has left unwritten, as if he anticipated the problems of the future and gave cogent solutions, but he has left it for us to discover. So all this he had done, and then this experience, after which he comes out and we see the Adesh comes to him after a few months. Go to Chandanagar. He will not go. So divine ne unko bhai, that's the place, via Chandanagar he goes to Pondicherry. So he goes to Chandanagar and then he goes to Pondicherry. In that there is a small little incident which is interesting because people often ask. So Chandanagar, he is having all... Now the yogi is becoming full blown. He is seeing the gods and people in Chandanagar. Motilal Roy is like, where are you staring? He says, gods. What are they doing? They are speaking to me. What are they saying? In a sign language. What do they mean? That's what I am trying to understand. So gods are coming, and out of them mainly the Vedic gods, goddesses, Ila, Mahi, Saraswati, Sarma, all these Vedic gods and goddesses started coming. Because Shri Krishna had already seen him, Vasudev Shri Krishna, and handed... He has not yet handed over the baton of the new age, that will be for later. But now he is going through that preparation where he would sit down below. People have made their, done yoga in Himalayas. We have heard, na, Himalaya, utne hajar feet ki uchai par jaake yoga kiya. Sri Aurobindo kahan kar rahe? Jail ke andar? Or tale mein, kya bolte hain usko? Basement. In the basement he is doing yoga. What a contrast. And quite understandable, because he who has felt divine in the prison of human nature, this is an article of his, Prison of Freedom, he alone can guide us. He knows what it means to be imprisoned in this consciousness. He was entered into the basement in the darkness. It was a very dark, dungeon place, unclean. He alone fits into the definition of God. What is Sri Aurobindo's definition of God? He who pervadest all the worlds below, yet sittest above, master of all who work and rule and know, servant of love. He who disdainest not the worm to be, nor even the clod. Therefore, we know by that humility that thou art God. What a humility. Whatever he is getting, he is eating. No outer show. Mother's grace, I have been to the place where Sri Aurobindo in Chandanagar, where he... they haven't, kept it as I feel they should have, but that's people's, their problem. But anyways, he lived there, and then after 15 days, he has to go to Pondicherry. Now comes the interesting incidents. So he has to go, and there is this man who is to give him a medical certificate. So there was a doctor, he has to disclose his identity. Now the problem of identity. So somebody asked me that why did he conceal his name? Of course, concealing the name was practically important. So he goes to the doctor. He has traveled under a different name, Sri Aurobindo. So he goes to the doctor, and the doctor is half drunk. So he is very impressed when Sri Aurobindo starts speaking English. So he says, "Oh, you speak so good English. Oh, you must be fit." He gives a fit. What a, you know, even Sri Aurobindo's little things are such a deep insight in human nature you can get. We get impressed, no, by language. Well, I am from this. Uske aage kuch puchna nahi hai. I am a Harvard idiot. No, so that's it. Yeah, you can't think straight, you can't think clear, but you are from that. So this is how he says ki he was very impressed by my English and gave the certificate. But another very interesting thing about that is, so somebody asked me ki why did Sri Aurobindo tell a lie? Why his name was concealed? It's true, he didn't travel as Sri Aurobindo's name. Now you see, people raise this question about Sri Krishna's Ashwatthama Hatohata. Ab fact ye ki original Mahabharat mein to Narova Kunjaro bhi nahi hai. Nahi hai. Vyas ki Ramayan mein nahi hai, Mahabharat mein nahi hai. Uske baad kya hota hai? Sri Krishna ne bol diya hai. Jaise hi bole Ashwatthama Hatohata, man mein tumne hathi ko mara and you beat the trumpets. Now you know he is gone. So kyon bola unhone? Are bhai, wahan wo तुम्हारे छोटे मोटे आइडियल देखेंगे या द हायर गुड. ही राइट्स इन एसेज ऑन द गीता, यू वॉन्ट टू रिमेन क्लीन विद योर हैंड्स क्लीन वाइल द होल नेशन गोज इन टू फ्लेम्स. बट दिस इज वन पार्ट ऑफ इट. बट वॉट इज इंटरेस्टिंग इज हाउ वी मिसअंडरस्टैंड ट्रूथ एंड लाई. सो द सज्जन हु हैड आस्क्ड मी, तो आई आस्क्ड हिम, डू यू नो वॉट नेम ही हैड ट्रेवल्ड अंडर, वॉट वॉज द स्यूडोनेम? He said, "No, but I know there was a pseudonym." So I said, "You find out. What is the pseudonym? I'll tell you." He traveled under the name Jyotindranath. I said, "Does the name befit Sri Aurobindo or not?" Rakh liya unhone apna naam, Jyotindranath. Aur kya? Ye thodi rakha era gera. Jyotindranath. See, our understanding, that's why during the freedom movement, I think Taradi's father ki story hai. That he said, if I tell the truth, there will be a problem and all this. What should I do? He said, many times you cannot tell the truth. It's better to remain silent. And second thing he said is that truth has to be seen as a whole, not in bits and parts. Like, abhi India ye nahi bata raha ki humne nukes ko bomb kiya. Quite naturally. Aap ye thodi bata sakte ho ki bhai humne unke nuclear bomb uda diya. It will be so silly. So, कहने का अर्थ ये कि you have to see things in totality, right from then. But this is a very interesting aside that he traveled. One of the names that Sri Aurobindo assumed, which is not generally widely known, is Jyotindranath. That the name on which the medical certificate was given, and with the orders of the divine in his heart, he launches his boat on an infinite adventure across the waters as they go splashing on to the shore of Pondicherry with that poem. Oh, gaya time. Padhun ki, question karun ki shaam ko. We can have anything. Anyways, thoda sa padh lete hain. Infinite adventure. The infinite adventure. That old edition, it was so simple. Now they have, you know, done a scholarly edition. So you have to go through the whole thing. Agya, 606 in this volume. The infinite adventure. Okay, fine. We got it. So this is the journey to which Sri Aurobindo is calling us. to fulfill a greater plan. This I take as a journey to Pondicherry from Chandanagar. On the waters of a nameless infinite. Us Bhagwan ko kya naam do? Nameless infinite. My skiff is launched. I have left the human shore. All fades behind me, and I see before the unknown abyss and one pale pointing light. An unseen hand controls my rudder. Night walls up the sea in a black corridor. An inconscient hunger's lion plaint and roar, or the ocean sleep of a dead eremite. I feel the greatness of the power I seek. Surround me, below me are its giant deeps. Beyond the invisible height the soul has trod, I shall be merged in the lonely and unique, and wake into a sudden blaze of God, the marvel and rapture of the apocalypse. I think we'll continue in the evening, then we'll have questions, because just to flow with this. Jema.